The Postal Service is a joke because they're handing out packages for Amazon and other internet companies, and every time they bring a package, they lose money on it.
That was President Trump talking to reporters last Friday. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin had just been answering a question about federal aid to the Postal Service as part of the First CARES Act. The U.S. Postal Service has been struggling financially since before the coronavirus pandemic. Now it's waiting for Treasury Department approval of a $10 billion loan that the president is threatening to not authorize. Joseph M. Adelman is an associate professor of history at Framingham State University in Massachusetts. He's the author of Revolutionary Networks, The Business and Politics of Printing the News, 1763 to 1789. Joseph, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you, Rob. I'm happy to be with you.
Well, let's start with that statement from the president. The U.S. Postal Service, he says, losing money for every package, say, from Amazon that it delivers. I know untangling a budget item like that in the federal government can be tough, but in general, is that true?
Probably not. As a historian rather than an economist, I obviously wouldn't know the exact details, but the deal that Amazon and USPS have obviously runs into the billions of dollars, but it's very unlikely that they're losing money and would require some pretty motivated thinking to generate an estimate that said that they were losing money.
Now, pulling back from that, let's talk a little bit about how the U.S. Postal Service operates in the modern era. It may surprise some people. It surprises me every time I hear it, actually. The U.S. Postal Service doesn't receive direct federal funding. Is that right?
That's right. So as part of the reorganization of the post office in the early 1970s and 1971, when it officially became the U.S. Postal Service, it became an independent agency in the executive branch, and the idea was for it to be self-sustaining, that it would run on its own revenues, and it has not taken federal funding in quite a number of decades. Until 2006, it actually had about a 15-year run of profitability during the 90s and in the early 2000s. And as a lot of your listeners may know or may have heard, in 2006, Congress passed a law that required the Postal Service to prepay into its pension retirement fund for employees by 75 years, which has since then created these massive deficits that are compounded then by a reduction in first-class mail as people have been sending more email. Right, you know this every day when you look at your mailbox, that there's less mail than there was 20 years ago. So it does not take federal funds as a matter of practice and hasn't since the early 1970s. But for most of its history, it has operated at a deficit and so has taken money on a pretty regular basis to support its operations.
Right. And when I say something like the U.S. Postal Service has been struggling financially, part of that, as you say, is a decline in how much mail we send. But part of it is this, I think in the business world and government world, this unusual provision of making the Postal Service prepay 75 years, as you said, worth of pension funds. That's a big part of the story.
Yes. Yeah. And that's very unusual in the business world. My youngest daughter is 2, and theoretically the Postal Service is paying for the possibility that she might work for the post office and retire in 63 years and need health care.
Talking to Joseph Adelman from Framingham State University in Massachusetts, looking at the U.S. Postal Service, present, future, and past. Philosophically, we kind of think of the Postal Service, I think, in a couple different ways. This idea that, okay, it's a self-sustaining government licensed business, in effect, versus this civic institution. And I know you've looked at that and the founding of what we think of as our post office in the days before we even had a constitution. Can you take us back to the original goal of having this postal service, even if we didn't call it the USPS at the time?
Sure. And you're exactly right that there's long been, even before it was the United States, a tension between the idea that Postal Service, lowercase p, lowercase s, is both something that is government-sponsored and that is a core function of government, and this idea that it's a business, right, that you pay for it as a service when you use it. You go and you mail a letter and you buy a stamp. And that goes back to the British colonial postal system when it was designed both as part of the British imperial system and so therefore as part of thinking about connecting the entire empire, connecting the colonies back to London, connecting the colonies to one another. And also the colonial postal system was actually supposed to generate revenue for the British treasury to support the crown. And when the United States, and actually not even the United States, before the Declaration of Independence by about a year, the Continental Congress created a Continental Post Office. So the post office is a national institution. The only ones that are older are Congress itself and the Army. It's older than the Navy, it's older than the Marine Corps, it's older than the Constitution. And they created it along these same lines. At the moment of the American founding, the emphasis was on the idea of the post office as a civic institution. It was not something that people thought was going to generate lots of revenue and certainly not generate profit. So it was designed to connect the country together. In fact, the current postal law even says it, that the goal of the postal system is to bind the nation together. And in the 1790s, when the post office was firmly established, it was designed for just that. And in fact, not even for personal correspondence, which the initial design of the post office made relatively expensive. What it made cheap was the circulation of news. And the idea was that you'd be able to circulate news in this new republic and create an informed citizenry throughout the United States. Postal Service is one of the powers that Congress has in Article I. It's explicitly defined in Article I among the enumerated powers. And so Congress in the early decades used that power to bring new territories into this system of the United States and its communication network. And it worked both ways. Local communities in new Anglo-American settlements in the West, as Native Americans were forced out, wanted a post office because it connected them into that network and because the constitutional grant of authority gave Congress the power to build post roads, which meant that if you could get a post office in your town, Congress would help build your road back to the previous town or back to the county seat or wherever. And then over the next 200 years, it's gone back and forth over time of how much it should be a self-sustaining business. And obviously that's the model that reigns a little bit more over the last 50 years. But we've always had this idea that it has an obligation to serve the entire nation, that I in Framingham, just outside the suburbs of Boston, can put a first-class mail stamp and mail something to somebody in Nome, Alaska, and have it be, no, it'll be delivered to Nome, Alaska, or to, you know, Madison, Wisconsin, or rural Wisconsin, to anywhere in the United States. And that really has been fundamental to the thinking about the post office and the ways in which we as Americans interact with it over the course of our history.
So we continue our conversation about the state of the U.S. Postal Service with history professor Joseph Adelman. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about President Trump threatening to withhold loan money for the Postal Service unless they charge companies more for package delivery? What would your life be like if the Postal Service stopped working? What do you rely on it for? Could you live with a more limited service, say fewer deliveries per week if it helped save money? What do you think about ideas of partial privatization? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Tony is with us in Tomahawk. Tony, hello.
Hi. You mentioned partial privatization. That's never going to happen. It'll be all the way within a few years. Ever since Reagan, there's just been this constant effort to privatize everything. There's no mystery here. I think anybody that follows the news knows this is what their whole ideological agenda has been. The whole idea of having them having to pay 75 years in advance for retirement costs, potential retirement costs, it's just absurd. Trump said that the post office is a joke. I think the law that said that they have to pay 75 years in advance is a total joke. They're trying to just privatize the deal because the post office can't give campaign donations, but FedEx and other companies can, private companies can. The other thing that I think is from a historical perspective is worth talking about, a lot of the postal workers are veterans. and people talk about, you know, loving the veterans and pride for the veterans and all that. Well, so many of them, they get special points, really, in order to get hired at the post office, and so many of the people working at the post office are vets, and we just need to support the Postal Service as it is and allow it to improve. Thank you.
Tony, thanks a lot for the call. Let's start with that point about privatization. There has been a movement calling for that for a few decades now. Joseph, can you talk about that?
Yeah, sure. And it's actually been an international push. In Germany, they've actually gone private. The postal system, Deutsche Post, is now a subsidiary of DHL, the package supplier, package delivery company. The Royal Mail in the UK has now been privatized. There's been discussions in Canada about Canada Post. And so the caller is correct that there's been a push in discussions about privatizing the Postal Service because it, based on the idea that it looks and walks like a business when you interact with it, and that it should be competitive in a marketplace with suppliers like UPS and FedEx. The difference is for the Postal Service that it operates under because the way it operates under federal law with the service obligation, it has expenses that no other supplier has. And one of the things that Amazon and other companies rely on the Postal Service for is the last mile delivery, that especially in rural areas, the Postal Service delivers because they're required to by federal law and do so in places where UPS and FedEx and DHL find it too expensive to deliver. And so even packages initially shipped through UPS or FedEx are sometimes actually delivered by the Postal Service because those private companies hand the package off to the Postal Service because they know that the Postal Service will actually go to those rural communities.
Thanks a lot for that call. We'll go now to Bob in Friendship. Bob, hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What did you want to bring up, Bob?
So, my concern with the post office is that they're a public service-oriented business. And their typical hours are from 8 to 4, being closed to 2 hours over the lunch period. So your average worker is not going to be able to access them. It seems to me a public-oriented business like that is bound to fail if you can't make your hours available for the majority of the people.
Bob, thanks a lot for the call. There are talks about cutbacks in services across the country, Joseph, and a lot of mail processing centers and post offices, I understand, have closed. Bob is looking for expanded services to serve people better.
Yeah, I mean, that's as an individual who also works and needs to run errands at particular times of the day, I'm certainly amenable to the idea of it having different hours. One of the things I would say in terms of how it chooses to have hours is that it's governed by a whole range of factors, one major one of which is customer service, union contracts, and federal law. The Postal Service, the services that it provides are governed by federal law. This relates to debates about restarting postal banking, which is something that's been proposed several times in the past year or so. And that's something that was occurring from about 1910 to the mid-1960s. But currently, the Postal Service is prohibited from doing that. They're prohibited from offering certain types of retail services. So federal law and Congress really get into the nitty-gritty of the operations of the postal system in a way that they don't with any other sort of business.
Thanks a lot for that call. In our last couple of minutes, Joseph, some people I think would argue, okay, once upon a time, the Postal Service was a critical connection for people around the country. And now we have the internet, we have private carriers of packages. Is it still needed to perform that role that the framers, even before the Constitution, envisioned for it?
I think the principle is important of having a provider of these kinds of services across the United States. I'd also argue that it is actually providing those services more than we think it is, or certainly more than most commentators, most of the op-eds describe it. In many communities, it is as true today as it was in the 1830s or in the 1780s, that the post office is a community gathering place, that it means that there's a presence for people who need various services, right, the postal system is where when I turned 18, I went and registered for the Selective Service, which I had to do. It's where you can do passport operations, even within the confines that Congress puts on it. It becomes a gathering place for the community, especially in more rural communities. It means that every community in the United States is connected into a network to be able to send mail, send packages, and connect in that way. So both for the principle of it and that it is an important connector within the community, I think it has value moving forward, even in an internet age.
Joseph, we'll leave it there for now. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you. I appreciated the conversation.
That's Joseph Adelman, Associate Professor of History at Framingham State University, author of Revolutionary Networks, The Business and Politics of Printing the News, 1763 to 1789. We talked to him today about the state of the U.S. Postal Service and its history and threats to the service from the Trump administration amid the coronavirus pandemic.